Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, the Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this magnificent journey that some people call caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. We will be interviewing Arlene Mickley, and we're going to be talking about no longer being a caregiver to your spouse. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to the show, we get many new listeners every week, especially since we have gone video. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial and, oh yeah, very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Imagine that. Hey, like the airlines always tells us, in the event of emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know this so well because if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved one, guess what will happen? You'll likely black out and you'll be of any good to anybody with anything. It's a lot of any's in there. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It kind of throws us automatically in this thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, only one way out of the grief process. You have to go through the grief process. Can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. Sorry, you got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're stuck. I want to thank my last week's guest, author of 15 Minutes of Fame, One Photo Does Wonders to Bring You Back to Solid Ground, Tren Rose Seeley. And just a reminder, you can hear that interview on podcast on my website. Just find the link, caregivers, caregiver.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. Just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free. What a deal. All right, enough of that. Arlene, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today, and I really, really appreciate it. And we're going to try to get your video going somehow, because we had it before when we tested yesterday, remember?
That would be true, but right now I just have a dark navy blue screen with a picture of you, which is not bad, not bad.
Imagine a beautiful lady, and that's Arlene. And Adrian, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
So why don't we begin, Arlene, by taking a minute or two and introduce yourself. Just who is Arlene Mickley?
All righty. Arlene Mickley is a woman who lives in Los Angeles, and I've been a quote-unquote valley girl since I was 6 years old. I am an educator by profession. I've taught K through 12 and adult. The last 40 years or so, I've been in educational publishing and consulting, of which I still do that. Our emphasis now in the last maybe 10 years is more to the adult ed market, more than the K-12, but still I'm involved on both. So that's who I am as a profession. I have four children and all grown and busy doing their own lives. And unfortunately, my husband died 5 years ago. And so I have learned another new life, just like the one I had when I met you, Dave, where I was the caretaker for about 14 years. Wow. So that kind of brings you up. I still have my own company and run a business just like I did even when I was the caretaker, which I know you have questions about. And yep. Hopefully I can share some of that and some of what I really learned about myself and about husband-wife relationship.
Yes.
By having to be a wife, a mother, and a caretaker.
You get the triple crown.
Triple crown. You got
it. I should probably tell everybody that I met Arlene and her husband Boyd at a stroke support group. And it was actually a group for caregivers. And no, it wasn't a group for caregivers, was
nope.
it? It was a group for the care receiver. So I tried to bring my wife, and she doesn't like caregiver groups because she likes to think that she's normal, and being around all these people who are disabled doesn't make her feel normal. And I guess I can understand that. But Arlene and I and Boyd and Charlene just felt this connection, and we became friends, the only ones in the whole group. And we went to dinner several times. We've been over their house.
You're frozen.
Oh, really? Hello, hello, hello?
I hear you.
Am I back?
You didn't freeze on my end, Dave, so go ahead and keep going.
So we became friends, and then recently, well, I'll let Arlene tell the story. Let me just ask you, Arlene, you know, when anyone experiences a loss, it's normal to feel sad and angry and hopeless and bereft and devastated and all those things. And, you know, our society says you should get over it in a week or two. Actually, it often takes 1 or 2 years and sometimes longer. Tell me your experiences that you had with these feelings and emotions when Boyd died.
I think it's a kind of complicated question in terms of making it more appropriate for any caregiver. And that is when your quote unquote job of caregiving is over, especially by a death, it really depends on were you a relative or were you a professional person doing that as a job? Not that one is easier or more difficult than the other, but that being said, when I'd like to back up a minute and understand how Boyd's and my relationship was in terms of me being his caregiver, as you say. When we had our normal life, both busy professional people, et cetera, and at 60-something, 66, he ended up with a massive stroke that left him. This was a man who was an ex-Olympic coach. He was a professor. His life was his words and his talking, and he lost all of that. So he lost it not only for himself, but as part of a marriage. And so you can well imagine how different our life had to be. And I think the point there is this. As a couple, we needed to recreate a life that would work for both of us as individuals, as me being a caretaker, and as him having a life. And I think one of the things that I hear, and this may be a little off your question, Dave, if you want me to stop, just say so.
No, keep going.
All right. Is that oftentimes as a non-professional caregiver, we forget that our job is not only to help them go to the bathroom, help them get dressed, help them get in and out of chairs, et cetera, but it's also to make sure that the person has a life. And both Charlene and Boyd, even though she wouldn't go to the stroke group, had lives. Boyd became a quite accomplished artist because I said to him, okay, what would you like to be doing? And in his ability not to talk, I asked another 23 questions, and we found out, and I knew, that he had painted years and years ago. So he was signed up. He went to stroke group at least once a week. He went and had an art teacher three times a week. He had physical activity. He went to the gym with a young man that I know who would go swimming with him as an ex-Olympic swimmer. That was an easy way for him to get back into part of his life. So my point being that each of us had to develop a life that we could live together and still be a married couple, and that would work for both. So really, during that next 14 years, we basically had a life like anyone else. I did have other helpers and other caregivers when needed, if I had to travel or if it was a time when I couldn't be there. So we had caregivers mostly during the day, during the week. I took night and weekend shifts as long as I didn't have to travel or be out of town.
Let me interrupt you one moment, Arlene. I just wanted to compliment you on the fact that, you know, you are a great caregiver because your number one purpose was to make sure that this was a win-win for both you and the care receiver, who happened to be your husband. And I felt the same way. So that's another thing we have in common is we both put our spouses not first, but a very, very close second, because I, too, wanted Charlene to have a life as you wanted Boyd to have a life. And so you went through all this effort. Okay, what can we do? I know we can, find out what he wants to do, painting, get back into swimming, etc. So Boyd, as far as I'm concerned, I never knew him when he was normal, but he had a very full life. And I know you showed me the pictures of his Olympic swimming and this and that. And that inspired me to make a video of him. And one day we're going to put that on our YouTube channel so that everybody can see that.
That'd be great.
You know, and I just wanted to compliment you because a lot of caregivers, unfortunately, and I'm sure you'll agree, Adrian, that, you know, their first thing is, okay, they're in survival mode. How am I going to get through this? You know, and they make it all about them. And I know there's a whole bunch of caregivers who make it all about the other person, you know, so both extremes are bad. You got to come to some balance in the middle, because if you give it all to the care receiver, you're going to burn out. If you give it all to you, then you're not going to have a very happy care receiver, which means you're not going to be very happy because they'll make your life miserable. Anything to add to that, Adrian?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Steve was not hampered as far as speech or anything. So it was very different. He continued to work after his cancer diagnosis. It wasn't until, let's say, the last 2 years of his life that some of his activities were compromised. But yes, we had to each have a life.
Yeah. So,
yes. And I think once you've done that, then it makes it better for both people.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, even if they're, let's face it, just as quote unquote normal human beings, you still have to have a life and you still get annoyed. And we had the best arguments considering he couldn't talk. People would laugh.
Yeah, me
because
too.
They would like go, how did you know? Oh, I know what he said. And, you know, and he better not be saying that again. And he just take his electric wheelchair and storm out the back door, which had a ramp, and that's fine. Then you just go there, you know. And so our life, that's why it's hard for me to answer how did it feel not to be the caregiver, you know, when that was over. And I did think of a few things.
You were more his wife, it seems, than his caregiver.
Yes, and yet I took the hard shifts, and at the end, I changed the pants and the clothes, and you know, and and
wife. As any good wife would.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I mean, that was interesting. But I did think last night about an answer about once that job was over, and I think it takes almost two parts. Obviously, if you have a relationship as a caregiver, you're going to have a relationship with that person, whether it's a relative or a professional person that you're being, you know, connected to. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that's important to be brought out is there's something that happens when you are a caregiver, especially if it's on a 24-hour basis, that it's sort of the same as when you have children. Once you have children, you never sleep the same way again. Am I right?
Yep.
Amen. That's it. You're like, boom. If you have animals, you tend not to do that either. But so I think as a caregiver, you're always sleeping with one ear open. So as once Boyd passed away, that was one of the things. I actually slept through the night, but it took months. It took months till I wasn't listening for whatever I needed because I was then living by myself. So that was one about not being quite as on alert, okay? The other thing, of course, is the fact that it was my husband. I was in the complete mode of grief. And I think if it's your parents, not that you wouldn't be in the mode of grief with anyone, a friend or parents or mm-hmm. someone you had taken care with. But when the quote unquote, and I know this will sound corny, but the love of your life just left.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound corny.
Yeah. Hi, well, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you.
It doesn't sound corny.
Oh, good. Okay, great. I don't want Dave to kick me off before I get to finish. So the bottom line is my grief time, and I don't know how to separate, to answer your question, how much of that grieving was obviously because I lost this wonderful man, but also,
really, you lost him. You lost him before also.
That is true. And he was in hospitals. He never came home for almost 2 years. Wow. Besides the 14 that he was home. So, but again, you go into a whole different mode because I was still the caregiver. Did my job, finished my job, got in the car, picked up a treat, drove to the hospitals or the home where he was, you know, where, like, what do you call the rehab, yeah, where he was for like 10, 11 months. So your life, again, changes, mm-hmm. which if you think about it, almost every human being is a caretaker of one sort or another.
That's right.
In their life. And even if they're single, like I have, one of my sons is not married. He has dogs. My yep. God, those are his children.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So yep. You tend to be a caretaker in one way or another. So I think when that life or job is over, that there will be that grief period. And yep. of course, that's for whoever. And the amount of that time really depends, of course, on you as an individual. I don't know that there's a perfect answer to that.
Right. Well, let me propose yes. this to you. Because when there's a death, take a couple of minutes to answer this. When there's a death, many caregivers feel relieved that their ordeal, quote unquote, is over,
yes.
and that the care receiver is no longer suffering. So that's the good news. Some caregivers feel guilty about this, and you know, it's one of many feelings that people have when caregiving ends. In fact, grieving may have started many years before with a gradual letting go process, particularly with dementia, you know.
Okay.
So let me go on to say many caregivers often begin to feel guilty at this point about every time that they were not the perfect caregiver, they were impatient. You know, they start going through the list of, oh, what could I have done better, you know, and instead of, you know, maybe they're thinking this during the funeral or whatever. They think about the times they were angry or frustrated or unkind at some point in their time as a caregiver. Did this ever happen to you? And if so, what did you do about those feelings?
Okay. I can say that I had both. Both things happen, but not necessarily when he died. To address your first item that you said was, you know, oh, good news, it's over. I don't have to. You know, it's easier on me not taking care of him. That, believe it or not, I think happens throughout the caregiving times. For instance, there were times when I, as I said before, where I would travel in my job. So I was away and I actually got to sleep in the hotel, you know, with all my own pillows. I didn't have to help anybody. All I had to do was get myself up and going and take care of my job, quote unquote. So at that time, and then I would call in as we had always done, because both of us always traveled. We always called in at night and said goodnight and blah, blah, blah. So was I happy that I wasn't doing that job during those moments? Absolutely. And yeah, it was felt good to get a relief from the job of caregiving. And I'm thinking that that's another whole discussion and issue some other time. When he died, I did not feel that because we had already built our life. So our life included doing our things that was our jobs. His was painting, being an artist. Mine was running educational consulting firm. And we did that. Then we did all of the grandparent things. I mean, we went everywhere. And I have one of our sons lives in Alabama. So there we were with the wheelchairs and the walkers and the everything else. And you'll appreciate this, Dave. There I am schlepping all the equipment. I get him on. We get up the Southwest Airlines onto the plane. And Mr. Mickley was this handsome dude with eyes that sparkled. And he's making friends and chitter-chatting with the stewardess who are helping him. And I'm still schlepping the walker and the other things. So, like, that life just was our life. And so we did everything. We weren't limited. So when he died, I never even thought of that. I wasn't doing that job anymore. I was just plain pissed that he died. Yeah. Do you know? And that my life of being with him was over.
On that note, I'm sorry to keep interrupting,
but that's good.
Time to schedule here. We're going to take a short break, so don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Bye-bye.
Great.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Arlene Mickley. And Arlene, yeah. I just want to say that you are, if there was such a thing as a perfect caregiver, you would win the award. Because...
I'm going to get a prize. I love it. I've been waiting.
Microphone, just a moment. And the reason I say this is because you and I have been doing this long enough that we learned the hard way what we're supposed to do. We've got our lives, you know, our caregiving lives, at least you did before, right. You know, Boyd died. And so when I'm asking these questions that you may say, well, gee, I didn't do that. Well, gee, I didn't feel that. Well, a lot of people do. So you're like the model that I'm putting up before them. You know, here's what you're supposed to do. So, for example, my next question. Okay. Often one of the first feelings caregivers have at this time is exhaustion, you know. Yes. Is this the time to catch up on your sleep or renew your energy? Or, you know, is it okay sometimes to just stay in bed for a day and cry or just pull the covers up over your head or watch TV or just enjoy the quiet of, you know, not doing?
Yes, and yes. But I did forget one thing that I didn't put in our conversation in this last half hour or so. She is still alive. She's not practicing. I had a psychologist who I went to. I had known her for years and had gone occasionally before. And she was, and I think is, having a psychologist or a professional person that you can go to yourself in order to understand what's going on as becoming this caregiver or not becoming a caregiver anymore. I say that that's probably one of the most important things that people should have in their life. And maybe it could be a clergyman. It could be, you know, I personally, like I said, I have two psychologists, doctorates in my family. So like, I don't get away with it, but it is a very important part. And I wasn't thinking of that when we were talking, but I think you have to have that. Then you can decide your own self. For your own self, does it do you well to go to bed for a day? Personally, I get bored out of my mind and I have nothing to do. And then I lay there going, why are you laying in the bed? So I personally am one who will go out to the garden, which then I could get lost for 2 to 3 hours. And I try to do that actually every day. And the irony of that is that was Boyd's other part of his life.
That's right.
We had, and you remember, I must still have like 100 bonsais. And he even in the wheelchair, we had to move things so he could get to them. But that garden was his life. And we, myself and all the children, used to make fun of him all the time. He'd come home from work before he had the stroke and boom, out to the garden. And guess what? I caught it. And all my kids caught it. And so for us as a family, that garden is part of what you're saying about needing a peace and quiet, whether it's an hour, 2 hours, or 10 hours. Yeah. Each person has to find that for themselves. I don't think that's different if you're a caregiver or not a caregiver. If you're a working person, you need that. If you're a married person or not married, or you have children, I can't think of almost any situation where you don't need a little private time to to re-gas up the situation.
Yeah,
you know.
And Adrian, I didn't mean to not include you in that example of, you know, getting it all together when we've had years and years of practice, because I know you too could win the perfect caregiver award prize. I think all three of us could, because we just learned, you know, and that's why we're here trying to teach others, because some people are just really, really struggling and they just don't get the concept, you know, put yourself first. Maybe it's because we're all entrepreneurs and business people, because, you know, some people allow their jobs to suffer and then they're, you know, they're fired or they have a business and they put it on hold and never go back to it. But, you know, we're all kind of driven, and so we used our businesses to help us to stay healthy and to maintain that part of our lives. So that's a good thing. Would you agree?
Yes. And in comment back on that, I remember in the very beginning, I tried going to caregiver meetings, you know, like Boyd went to the stroke group and he loved that. That was fabulous. And by the way,
I didn't go with him.
You know, I made him be at that, take him and let him be there without quote unquote me there, because then he had to be who he was with what he had and he managed.
You weren't his voice. He had to be his own voice.
Yes, exactly. And I think I remember in the beginning going to groups for me, like to go to caregiver groups where people talked and I don't know, maybe like it's what you said. Maybe it's because being a starter type person in your own businesses and your life and the way you were, I found.
You'd have to justify the time it takes to be there. And if you're not getting that much out of it, if you get more out of just going to work, then so be it. You know?
Yeah. I felt that there was a lot of feeling sorry for oneself.
Yeah.
And not that I'm, like I said, on the other hand, I think everyone in that group could have used a psychologist of someone who is qualified to help you understand how you are feeling and what you can do about it. That's why I think you're so positive. And I don't know Adrian well, but from all the things, I haven't looked at everything online yet. I just didn't have time. But so you've made a wonderful life with your husband when he was alive and now, you know. So, Dave, you're lucky and or not lucky. You're still in the caregiver mode.
And not everyone should do that. And I'm not saying you should do that. You know, I understand you, you have a very healthy and happy life just like you did before.
It's getting there.
Adrian, any comments on what we just discussed so far?
Well, I mean, I just learned to trust. If I was depressed and needed a day to just be in bed and collect myself, I would listen to my feelings and not beat myself up like, oh, well, you shouldn't be feeling sad right now. Oh, I should be feeling sad. I just lost my husband.
You know, right.
We'd prepare for it. It wasn't a surprise. There had been a lot of pre-grieving, anticipatory grief. And we did that together. So once I was alone, I had listened to myself all during his illness. I felt true to myself, and that was the way that I was able to keep our lives going. And I had to be true to myself afterwards. If I wanted to sleep all day shortly after he died, I just stayed in bed all day and slept until I was ready to come out of it, it wasn't a long period, but I was kind to myself and I didn't beat myself up for whatever I was feeling. Can't hear you.
Oh, I haven't said anything. Dave, are you on?
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying, you know, it's so hard for people to not do that. So it's great advice. Yes, Arlene.
Yeah, no, I loved your words, Adrian, and it is about being truthful and kind. And if you can't do it on your own, that was my feeling of why I thought it was so important to have a professional person that you could go to say, look, even when they say, when you are the caregiver, while you're being the caregiver, as well as after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also the grieving part, if you're still young enough that you want a life and, you know, and have a life, then it's a different thing than learning to grieve that you lost the partner that you had and now they're alive and you need to be a caregiver or care person in a different way than just being a spouse. So again, yeah. I highly recommend that you go for help if you can't feel or touch your own feelings. And if you have feelings of depression or sadness or whatever, I think there's nothing wrong with finding help for that. Whatever that might be for the individual.
Yeah.
I mean, I did have a therapist that I saw during and after.
Yes.
Steve passed. And having someone to help me transition was good. I had a place to talk. I had a place to dump my feelings and learn from them.
Yes.
Did it surprise you what came out of your mouth in those counseling sessions?
Not really. That was that. I think I'd been in therapy long enough that I wasn't the least bit surprised.
Yeah. Again, and I think I learned to do that too, way before the stroke. Do you know? Right. In other words, I already had too many children, too many jobs, too many things. And it was like, I think I'm burned out. And I was maybe 40. And I was like, okay, time. And I think that sometimes when you're strong, outgoing individuals, you tend to not think you need help. And I don't mean help in the way physical help.
Right.
But you don't tend, you go, I can do this. And I found that it was wonderful. And besides, I adore her, my therapist, as a human being. We have become friends. And so I think everybody owes themselves that part of their life. Find it. It's out there to give you the tools that you need to deal with being a caregiver, being a husband, being a wife, being a mother, yeah, being all of those things. Whatever we were all trained individually as, even as an educator, you know, when you, I could handle 35 sixth graders, but, you know, but what your own two kids at one time, you know, I remember going, all right, everyone go to their room and leave me alone till I can figure out what I'm going to do here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that kind of thing that's about life, Dave. You know, yeah. It's really about living.
Let's talk about the funeral. Tell me all the emotions that you were feeling and you know, did it surprise you? I was there.
Yeah, I know. Everybody, the entire, we were the only, not the only, we were a large room of lots of wheelchairs and walkers.
It was a great service.
Yeah, I thought it was a great service.
Celebrated his life well.
Yes, the all the people, not all, many of the important people of the different times in his life were there and sharing that. And it, you know, it was the, what do you call a memorial service and reception after it was supposed to be done by 2 o'clock or 3 at the latest. And at 6:30, I think they were wondering if I was going to serve dinner, you know. So it was, that was, it was really a celebration of his living and his life. So I really didn't have time to grieve right then. It was more about getting everything together and putting a thing and having a reception back
getting
at
through
the
house. Day.
And yeah, I mean, and if you think about it, I believe that the ceremony wasn't for like a month or two. I think it was in June, and he died in April. I didn't do the memorial right away because I didn't wanna. Okay. I didn't want to on show. I wanted to feel whatever I was feeling selfishly with me and my family. And so I don't know if that answers what you said. Like, yeah, like he died 2 days before his birthday. And on that Saturday, the immediate family and our closest friends, they threw a party at the house with a birthday cake. So I don't know if that's good or sick or what. But that's the grief started my grieving time. And I cried. I still can cry down Woodley. You know where Woodley is, David. That's out here in the valley. And if a certain song is on the radio and I'm driving down Woodley, that's it. Makeup runs. The whole thing goes to pot. Okay. So, and that's now. And I'm pretty okay. I hope I never lose that.
You know, I understand. So, I understand you're dating. Some people might think it's being disloyal to your loved one. You know, those emotions.
Yes.
Others might say my loved one would want me to find a new relationship. Did you and Boyd ever discuss this before he died?
No, we did not. But the man that I'm dating lost his wife 1 month after I lost Boyd. And so the two of us for 1 year, we both used to go to this restaurant as couples, not knowing each other, the same restaurant for almost 30 plus years. And he said, you know, I think I remember seeing you guys come in with the big old wheelchair. And the irony is that neither of us went to a bereavement group. We sat in one table that's like in a little cove in this restaurant for 1 year. Every Friday night we would meet and talk. We were not dating. We just kind of liked each other, got along, and we talked and we cried and we cried and we talked and we cried and shared all those kinds of things. So for me, I was really lucky. for him, he was really lucky. You know, and now, like I said, I think I shared this, Adrian, with David, that now I still have a piece of me. You know, you raise a ton of children, and then you're a caregiver for 14 years. There's pretty hard to shut those kinds of things off.
Right.
And now my friend says things like, I'm fine. I can walk from here to there. Don't worry about it. I'll be fine. So that is my clue that maybe I'm being just a little too motherly and a little too caregivery. So what can I tell you? Maybe that'll never go away. Maybe I will always be a nudge on those things. And so I don't know that that changes.
Adrian, same question.
Yes, Steve and I discussed it. He wanted me to have a good life after he died. The thing that made him saddest about passing was leaving me. And he gave me a list of people that I could not date.
I love it.
That you knew.
Specifically. And they were all people that fancied me. So this was like, okay, these eligible people are not off the table, you know.
And you would never consider them because he said that, right?
Of course. Of course. Okay. I certainly respected that. I have been fortunate enough to find someone who, he's never been married, but he respects Steve's memory. He's bi-coastal, so I have my apartment that he comes to when he comes to New York, and Steve's pictures are everywhere. This was our home that we built, our baby from scratch. There's no way that I can write Steve out of my life, and my boyfriend is perfectly okay with that. Yes, his picture is also on my nightstand now. But so is Steve's.
That would be true, right?
So
mine too. Yep.
That's exactly. A good story. Arlene, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. We're just going to have to do it again sometime.
Well,
see, I told you it went
you.
Fast, didn't I?
Oh, it did. And I feel bad about the video. I would have loved to.
Well, you know, we tested it, but we didn't test it with a group. Apparently, the group chats is a new feature.
Okay.
So you've got to upgrade your Skype, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show and agreeing to do it. I really, really appreciate it. And we got to get together, the four of us, and
Here we come.
At a Mexican restaurant or something.
You got it.
How can anyone get a hold of you, Arlene, if they want to glean some more of your wisdom? Or I don't know if you have a website. Or
No, I don't have a website, but I have an
email,
a personal email address that
okay.
I'd be happy to share. And it is my name spelled out, ArlenMickLey at gmail.com. And I love chatting. I will try to answer any and all emails in a timely manner. And I thank you. I think this is a wonderful thing that you do, David. I didn't realize that it was still continuing on. And you as well. I don't understand everything that Adrian does yet. But now I'm going to go back and look at all the stuff that he told me to look at yesterday.
Well, she's gonna give her contact information. I recommend you write down her website and her Facebook page. She has an amazing, amazing platform that she's developed. And what's the latest number of people that are following you, Adrian? I can't keep track of it.
It's like 154,000.
Love
wow.
Facebook.
A lot of people.
And we have a very
active
Instagram page now, too. We're on all sorts of different platforms, but it's Adrienne, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. And it's .org, not .com, .org. And the website is thecaregiverspace.org.
All right. Well, just as a reminder, all our live shows become recorded podcasts on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And don't forget to take that quiz. Find out if you're a candidate for burnout. We'll send you my book absolutely free. And so until next week at noon Pacific time, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific. Or catch the program anytime, 24/7, right here on Radio Star Worldwide.